consecutive time in the last six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Well, hello there. Welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast. Lots to discuss in the company of James O'Toole. James, how are you doing?
Not too bad, Adrian. How are you? Welcome back.
Yeah, good to be back. And thanks for steadying the fort and keeping the ship on a straight course over the last couple of weeks. Although, do you know something? I have a bone here. I have a big bone and I want to pick it with you. Will you pick this bone with me? Because, yeah, even though like nobody leaves the country at the moment, of course, because everybody's doing this buzzword staycation, but you know, it was a bit of a busman's holiday, so I needed my fill up of football. So I watched plenty of Watch LOI over the last couple of weeks. And I also listened to the podcast the very first week when Damien O'Mara was presenting. And at the end of it, he said, yeah, I hope Adrian Eames isn't listening because I'm not sure I did that well. To which you replied, it's much more professional today.
I know what's coming out here now.
Now, I don't bear a grudge.
I couldn't diss Damien, let's be honest. He was the man that was there in this hot seat at the time. We have to help these newbies out, you know, Adrian.
Yeah, careful what you say now, because Damien, he's on holidays now, staycationing, obviously, and he'll be listening in. So, you know, just be careful, James, just be careful. Anyway, you're doing good. Lots of
football. Listens.
Yeah, well, there you go. So much to discuss. Of course, a big week for Stephen Kenny, as we know. It's going to be a very emotional night, I'm sure, in Sofia on Thursday, taking charge of the Republic of Ireland for the very first time. FAI EGM, of course. Looks like money's on the way back. Some 35 million of government money. More on that very shortly with Mark Tighe. Also, of course, plum draw for Shamrock Rovers in the next round of the Europa League, James, against AC Milan. And of course, as we know, the pity is there won't be fans in attendance and they're going to lose out financially on that. But we'll come to that. We'll also be chatting with Harry Kenny, former Shamrock Rovers player, about that. But we're delighted to say we're joined by Kenny Cunningham, 72 caps for the Republic of Ireland. Very shortly, we'll also hear from Harry Kenny, former Shamrock Rovers player, and indeed St. Pat's and Bray Wanderers manager. But Kenny Cunningham, first of all, Kenny, it's a very, very special week, a proud moment, I'm sure, for Stephen Kenny. He's got the opportunity now, a dream about to be realised. Republic of Ireland manager, he lead out the team in Sofia on Thursday, and then he's got the home game against Finland, also in the Nations League next Sunday, at that game, as I mentioned, at the Aviva Stadium. So a very, very special time for him and for his family. But I'm just wondering, as a manager, he's had very little time to prepare with the players on a one-to-one basis. So do you feel for him a bit?
Oh, I don't feel too bad for him, Adrian. he's got the best job in the world, let's be honest, from an Irish perspective. So I certainly don't think Stephen will be feeling sorry for himself, so I'm not going to feel any sympathy for him now. I think the overriding emotion from Stephen's point of view must be just excitement, just to meet up the players. I'm sure he's been doing a lot of prep with the lads, Damien in particular, in terms on the training pitch in Keith, and I'm sure they're just they can't wait to get going. Yes, it's only a small, it's only got a couple of days prep prior to the game against Bulgaria, but I think the game which is really driving everything over the next few months is obviously the Slovakia away game, the playoff game. And if you look at it in that respect, Adrian, I think the kind of the games against Bulgaria, Finland, for me actually that's pretty good preparation for that, such an important game. The three games will be very competitive. There'll be a nice little run-in in terms of a bit of quality time with the players. So I'd probably disagree with you slightly in that respect, Ray. I think when you look at it as Slovakia, as the kind of that game in the distance, and in terms of, right, let's get what do we need to do? Can we get a few competitive games, kind of sharpen up, get to know the players, and get that kind of bit of philosophy across as you're talking about? I actually think it's a reasonable amount of time. In a short period of time, I'd agree with you, Adrian, but I think there's a fair chunk of time there, and in particular the competitive nature of the games as well, Adrian, will be a help for Stephen and the staff in terms of preparation for that all-important fixture against Slovakia.
Okay, that's fair enough. I guess I was really getting at the fact that, you know, coronavirus has affected everything. He hasn't been able to travel over to England, meet players, talk to them face-to-face. Obviously, there's been a lot of Zoom meetings or Teams meetings or whatever you will, but he hasn't had that one-to-one contact. But anyway, I take the point in the broad sense. Just in terms of his footballing philosophy, Kenny, because Stephen Kenny's teams always play a certain brand of football. He likes a good passing game, and he's talking about changing the way that Ireland are viewed in terms of football, because, as you will know even from your own time, any time you heard an opposing manager, they invariably said, oh, the Irish, they'll be very spirited, they fight for every ball, they, you know, they're committed, it's very spirited. They never talked about the finer qualities of Irish teams over the years. So he's got a very particular philosophy and a way of playing football, but ultimately, you need the players to do that. Do you think he can implement that philosophy he has on the current Irish setup?
Yeah, well, that's just, yeah, it's a point well made, Adrian. I think that's what everybody's looking forward to seeing. I agree with him in principle. I've listened to a little bit of Stephen speaking, and in terms of maybe we undervalue our players, we don't appreciate them, and the technical abilities of our players as well. I would agree with him in that respect. I hope people are still saying those things about Irish teams going forward, the kind of attributes that you've mentioned there in terms of work rate, kind of commitment, never say die. I'm sure that won't change, and that's going to be important as well going forward. But certainly, yeah, in terms of Stephen's style of play, he's indicated he's looking for a slightly different approach, potentially, to previous managers. But ultimately, it's going to have to be successful. That's the nuts and bolts of it. So really, I'm sure Stephen has a clear vision, Adrian, in terms of how he'd like the team to play, that kind of style philosophy that you're talking about. But of course, it has to be appropriate to the players that you're dealing with. It has to play to their strengths, the system which you put down on the training pitch. It has to kind of complement the individual attributes of the players. And Stephen has a good knowledge of the players, of course he does. So we can only hope that whatever template that he puts down, the players kind of buy into it, and they enjoy it, and it actually gets the very best out of them. And ultimately, it ends up in some form of success for the team. I think stripping it down, Adrian, all you can really ask of any manager at any kind of club setting, club or international, is really, you know, get the best out of what you have available to you. And managers go about that in different ways. And part of that will be kind of psychology in terms of people getting in people's heads and making them feel good about themselves, creating the right type of environment around the squad. And part of that will be the kind of crude tactical setup of the team. What formation are you going to play? What kind of patterns of play are you going to insist on the players playing in and out of possession in the football? That's kind of really the kind of nuts and bolts of the game. So all of that is really very interesting. I mean, we all know how Stephen kind of likes his teams to play, but ultimately, until we see it kind of rolled out, we're not going to be able to judge it. But I'm quite excited about the prospect, in all honesty. But I like the initial thoughts from the manager, and I like the way he's kind of talking up the players. Generally speaking, there hasn't been enough of that for me over the previous for a long time. So that all augurs well, and I'm quite excited about the prospects of the team. Looking at the squad, the individual attributes of the players, I'm very optimistic about the games in the immediate future.
And Kenny, as you know, we have a very settled back four with Seamus Coleman and Duffy, obviously, and John Egan. And Egan had such a terrific season at Sheffield United and rewarded with a contract extension as well, and Enda Stevens. They generally will be the back four with Darren Randolph in goal. Looking further forward, what way do you think he's going to tweak the rest of his team?
It's looking as if we're guessing maybe 4-3-3. I'm guessing that's just an educated guess, maybe looking at how Stevens shaped up his teams previously. That may not be the case. He may surprise us, but I would expect maybe a 4-3-3. Formation. I'd probably disagree slightly in terms of the back four picks itself. I think when you look at Matt Doherty, the form he's been in over the period of time, I think when you look at a back four, maybe a 4-3-3 formation, really that only leaves space for either Seamus or Matt Doherty in that right back position. I don't think it's a given that maybe Seamus plays. Adrian, if I say so, a huge experienced player and has been playing very well, Seamus, and he will be integral going forward as part of the squad. But Matt is pushing really strongly for that starting position. I think when Mick played both of them in the team the last qualifying campaign against Gibraltar, he played Matt, I think, at the advanced position, kind of right side midfield. It didn't work too well. I think he looked a bit uncomfortable. I think likewise, Seamus would have found the same. So I think in a 4-3-3 formation, Adrian, I think really only one of them can play. I wouldn't be 100% sure it necessarily would be it'd be Seamus either. But further up the pitch, I think we've got some great options. James McCarthy, I'd love to see him start in that holding midfield position if he's fit. If not, I think Jace Malumbi's more than capable of stepping into that holding midfield position. And then great options ahead of that. We've got some good attacking midfield players. Jeff Hendrick, Conor Hourihan for me. I'd like to see him a bit higher up the pitch. Conor's got that great shot off his left foot. Harry Arthur, etc., comes into contention in that kind of central midfield area, as does Alan Brown from Preston. So, yeah, some say big decisions, but it'd be interesting to see how Stephen sees in that kind of central midfield area, which is always key, Adrian, in terms of how the team kind of functions. And then up top, of course, probably even more excitement, some of the young talent that we have up there, the likes of Adam Oyd. I'd love to see him get some minutes. I think he will. Aaron Connolly, of course, is forging his reputation. And some good experience around that as well, the likes of kind of James McLean, etc. in particular. Callum Robinson's reasonably experienced now as well. So some really good options in that central and forward areas of the pitch, Adrian. It just depends really how the manager sees it.
Kenny, do you think the fact that Stephen has a complete clean slate here, it's going to help him picking the team? As in, he doesn't owe anybody anything in that team, like we've heard from other managers in the past. Oh, they got us the championship, so I picked that team, or etc. Do you think that's going to help Kenny in any way?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, James. I don't think it'll be a big factor. I think Stephen's like a strong enough character, his own man. I think he'll pick players on merit as he sees it in terms of his system of play, style of play, whatever you want to call it. I'm sure he's got some clear pictures in terms of what players fit into that that mould, into that system, which best complements what he wants to do. So that's what I'm thinking. We're all kind of talking about and kind of preempting things, but until we actually see his first couple of games and see what kind of team he puts out, kind of formation, even individual personnel. I mean, we've got three games. I said we've got three games, James, which is a reasonable amount of time. But even still, I think you want to be getting as many of your... I'm sure he has a body of players there who he feels as if he's almost penciled in for that Slovakia game. Maybe eight or nine players, even at this stage, James, he feels as if, yeah, I want to get them on the pitch against Slovakia. But you want to get those players time together on the pitch prior to that, particularly in those areas of the pitch, like, say, two centre-halves, Adrian spoke about, Shane and John Egan. You want to get them playing together, get more time together. If it's full-back and winger on one side of the pitch, get them on the pitch and get some game time together, just get that bit of, a bit of understanding between players in certain areas of the pitch, little combinations of players. You want to get as much game time into those players is possible. So I think these next two games, the next few days, will give us a fair indication possibly how Stephen's looking towards that Slovakia game, and really the kind of ideally the starting 10-11 who he's looking to put on the pitch for that Slovakia game.
Well, we're also joined by Harry Kenny, former Shamrock Rovers player and former St. Pat's and Bray Wanderers manager. Harry, looking on Stephen Kenny, I mentioned at the very outset of the podcast, such a big week for him, and for him as a manager and as a person who grew up in Tala, to lead out his country against Bulgaria on Thursday, you can only imagine what will be going through his mind. Obviously, he has to focus on the football because that's what it's all about, but it is going to be very special on a personal level for him, isn't it?
Oh, huge for him. Absolutely huge for him. I think he's on record as saying it's going to be the proudest moment of his life, and which it should be. He's a brilliant football man, and that's sort of the pinnacle for any manager to be managing your country. And he'll be very nervous, obviously. There's huge scrutiny on the whole FEI for a number of reasons, and particularly on the football for Stephen. He just wants to get on with that, and I'm sure he's delighted that it's starting very shortly.
Kenny, obviously people will have to show a degree of patience because it's not going to be a sudden change. I mean, he'll need time to bed in, of course. But do you think, just the nature of international football, because one result, they always say one result, you're always one result away from a crisis. But how much patience and time do you think people will need to give Stephen Kenny to allow him to bed in? Obviously, as you mentioned, the Slovakia game is key, isn't it?
Yeah, it is key. But I would like to build. I don't feel as if we go and lose that Slovakia game, hopefully we won't. But that's not the end of the world. And I think you're right. We have to be a little bit patient. We have to back the manager and give him a little bit of time. Undoubtedly, I think there's a lot of good feeling towards Stephen anyway, generally around the country. Kind of Harry's kind of alluded to it there a little bit. People within the game, within kind of a League of Ireland in particular, he has the best wishes of everybody. Everybody's hopefully he'll go and make a success of it. So, yeah, degree of patience, yeah, absolutely. I think people will will give them that. And as long as people see a little bit of progress being made, they're enjoying the football, what they're saying. I'm not a big one for, it's all about results for me personally. You know, you get a good result one week, you're a good manager. You get a bad result the next week, you're a bad manager. It's all about the results. For me, you got to look a little bit deeper than that in terms of quality performance, individual players. Are they improving? You know, is he getting the best out of players? Are we enjoying as a spectacle what we're seeing from the Ireland football team, what Stephen's putting out there? And ultimately, I understand the results invariably will determine how long he stays in the game, but I don't think it's quite as simple as that. But I do think he will get time, and rightly so. And hopefully over time, we'll see the improvement in the team. We'll see the team kind of take on his kind of ethos and his philosophy, those things that you've spoken about. Hopefully they'll embrace it, they'll enjoy it. The environment will be right, and they'll get the very best out of the players going forward.
Harry, we saw Enda Stevens in the paper today suggesting that it doesn't matter what path you take to get where you want to be in your career, be it a soccer player or, as Kenny's done, to be international manager.
Yeah.
But since under 21 of Pat's, this is what he's been building up to, really, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. He's an ambitious fella. Like when he took on the Dundalk job and sort of saved them initially, and then his whole aim then at the time was to get into Europe, and which he did, and then it was to compete in Europe and get into the group stages, which he also did. He's hugely ambitious when it comes to the football, and I know he'll have the same ambitions with the Ireland team. As Kenny was saying there, he'll put his own stamp on it. Mind you, he only has a short window to do that, in fairness, and that'll take time. And I just hope that the people of Ireland are very patient with him, because he will put his own style on it, and I think he'll do a very good job.
Kenny Cunningham, Kenny, what did you make of Jason McAteer's comments there recently about the appointment of Stephen Kenny? A lot of people here obviously were surprised with the way he approached the subject, more or less dismissing Stephen Kenny's curriculum vitae.
Oh, well, I didn't read Jason's comments. I don't do too much social media, you know, agents don't be following too many of the lads on their and their comments. I get the gist of what you're saying. No, I don't buy into that at all, to be honest with you. I think it's weak comment, that, in all honesty. I can only speak about myself as a player in the dressing room. I play under a few different managers. And I think I take the point where a manager who walks in of a certain stature certainly kind of commands the dressing room. So somebody with a big reputation, maybe he's won things, managed at a very high level. So when that type of manager walks into a dressing room, he immediately commands the dressing room. I understand that. But ultimately, you have to back it up. And those type of managers, for me, if they can't back it up, and very quickly you think, do you know what, there's not a lot of substance to this man, very quickly you start losing respect for that manager, no matter what his stature is. On the flip side, if a manager comes in who hasn't got that type of reputation, maybe hasn't managed at the highest level, me personally, I always felt, well, I'm going to be open. I'm going to give this fella a chance. I'm going to be prepared to listen. And if that person wins me over in terms of his kind of football knowledge, his acumen, even in terms of his personality, his attributes as a human being, how he deals with people, well, then that gets a buy-in for me straight away. And I think most players are very open-minded like that. So I don't agree with the argument that he hasn't managed at a certain level. I think in some respects, I think he has a wonderful curriculum. His experience in Europe, for example, he's managed a huge amount of games in European competition with Dundalk. So I think comments like that really kind of are, I'm a little bit insulted as a player that players are so small-minded that anybody who hasn't got a massive CV as a manager who walks in the dressing room, the lads are immediately going to dismiss him. I don't think players think that way. I think players are a lot more intelligent than that, and they'll give people a chance to win them over. And I think that'll be the case with Stephen. I think the players will be very open-minded. I think they will respect what he's done in the game, albeit predominantly in the Eritrea League of Ireland. But ultimately, they'll be won over by what he has to say, how he organises the team, how he deals with people, and what impression they get with him on a day-to-day basis going forward. So for me, the rest of it is irrelevant. It's what he does in front of the players, how he treats players, what he puts onto the training pitch, what he has to say. They're the things that the players will judge him by, and rightly so.
Yeah, Harry, your thoughts on that particular subject, because you've managed in dressing rooms. Will he have to win the players over, or will he find a dressing room, as Kenny suggested there, that might be open to listening?
I think he'll have to win it over, actually, going into
really?
it. Yeah, I do, yeah. I thought the comments were rubbish, by the way, that, you know, Jason McIntyre's comments, I thought was really for himself, to get himself noticed more than anything else. He had a little pop at Brian Kerr as well at the same time. I didn't think
it is his view. He's entitled to his view.
He's certainly entitled to his view, but I mean, the guy hasn't even started in the job on that side of things. But I think Stephen Kenny will earn his car now when it's on match day, and how he talks to the players, what he says at half time, what he says at the end of the game, what he says in the training ground over the next number of days, how he applies himself, what the knowledge is like that he's putting out to the players. And players are very, very smart. They see things and they smell things. I think they'll take to him right away because he's very, very good on the game. And I also think that his style of football, I think players will lap that up. I don't think they really had that over the last while.
And just a word, Kenny, on a man we already mentioned, of course, Matt Doherty, that big money move from Wolves to Tottenham. He seems to be pretty excited about the move himself, and it's great. In terms of the Irish international setup, the fact that he's moved to Tottenham, will that improve him as a player? Because Wolves have been fantastic over the last year or so.
I think it's a good question because a lot of people automatically think, oh, a marvellous move, fantastic move. But really, actually, when you break it down, I think he's in a pretty good environment there anyway. I'm a huge fan of the manager at Wolves, Nuno Santos. I think he's a brilliant manager, great coach as well. A lot of players have improved under his tutelage at Wolves, and Matt's probably one of them. So, in a funny way, that wouldn't be the type of environment as a player I'd be looking to jump out. But I understand Matt's been there 10 years. He wants a different challenge, and the opportunity to work alongside, say, Jose Mourinho for a period of time, that must be very inviting. So I can understand that, why he's jumped, looking to improve himself again in a different environment. It's a kind of different challenge. So good luck to him. But he's certainly playing with a lot of confidence. He's probably one of the most productive attacking fullbacks in the league, and it'll be interesting. One of the things we're all interested in is potentially if he can accommodate Matt in the team alongside maybe Seamus. I've got me doubts in terms of the 4-3-3 formation, how you can get them both into the team. I think it's an argument if you play kind of three at the back, you can get Matt in as a wing back and Seamus playing right of a three. I think he's experienced enough Seamus to play in that position, but not too sure whether Stephen will lean towards that type of formation. It hasn't done too often, but that'll be the interesting. But they're the kind of options that we want, you know, top class players competing, vying for positions all over the pitch. So it's the type of decisions that you want to have as a manager in terms of having to make those key decisions, really, in terms of players in certain areas of the pitch.
Okay, well, listen, we'll leave it there with you, Kenny Cunningham. Many thanks for joining us on the RTÉ Soccer Podcast. Harry Kenny is staying with us. James, the FAI Cup. No, actually, we will come on to the FAI Cup in just a moment. I guess we should start with that plum draw, Harry, for Shamrock Rovers against AC Milan after that sensational penalty shootout win over Ilves Tampere last Thursday. AC Milan coming to Talis Stadium. And of course, as I mentioned at the outset, the big shame is the fact that there won't be any fans at the ground for the game. And, you know, obviously then, therefore, Shamrock Rovers going to lose out potentially on a lot of money that could have been made. But nonetheless, what a mouth-watering draw.
Oh my God, they couldn't have asked for better. It's a real catch-22. They could have got a team from Lithuania or a team from Hungary, the team that knocked out Bowles there on that penalty situation. But what a draw. The players would be absolutely really, really excited about that draw. The whole club would be. And as you rightly say, it's an awful pity that there's no crowds allowed to attend the game. And even, I believe, the UA team have the TV rights, and they're not going to make certainly enough money out of it. Well, as much money as they would do if things were normal. But it's a brilliant draw, and I only see the other day that Zlatan Ibrahimovic has signed a new deal there. AC Milan haven't been in Europe in a fair few years, so they'll be putting everything into the game. But in a one-off game, you just never know. I think it's an absolutely brilliant draw, though.
Yeah, you just never know. AC Milan back in Ireland for the first time, James, of course, since 1975, Athlone Town, St. Mel's Park, a muddy day, a nil-all draw. It should be quite different in a couple of weeks' time in Talla Stadium. But the prospect of Zlatan Ibrahimovic coming to Talla, it is just a shame. There's you know, that fans won't be allowed in. But nonetheless, what a draw.
Yeah, it is some draw. And in fairness, I think AC Milan would be expecting a pitch like Athlone's on that day. But unlike that, they're going to turn up to a pristine Talla Stadium and see exactly what how far the League of Ireland have come in them years since they were last here. It's a massive draw. It's just really, really unfortunate, as you said. No fans allowed in, which is shocking. Really, really poor. But there you go. It's those breaks you get. You get a big draw and then that happens.
What was St. Mel's Park like to play in, Harry?
Very muddy. Actually, Trapattoni was the manager then, wasn't he? He brought AC Milan to Atlanta that time.
He was indeed, when the league didn't exist.
Yeah. No, St. Mel's was a bit of a bog of a pitch. I swear to God, the changing room, you could only fit about 5 or 6 into it, and there was only one or two showers between everyone. And after playing on a muddy pitch and coming into the changing room, where you had only little room for players, and everyone trying to huddle under one or two showers, it was just, well, that's the way it was in them days. They certainly changed that now. There's a great setup, but it was very difficult in them days.
Certainly has changed. Lissy Wullen now is a marvellous setup. But yes, St. Mel's, there was something about it. I only got to one or two games there, and I really liked it. But anyway, we digress. What about the penalty shootout, James? On Thursday night, 12-11, Joey O'Brien and Alan Manus, both amongst the heroes.
Yeah, and do you know what it reminded me of? I think this it broke the record, and as far as I remember in my head, the last record was held, Drogheda played in the last record breaking penalty shootout, and they lost 11-10 in Dalymount Park. It kind of reminded me of that. But in fairness about goalkeepers, if you're going to ask someone to take a penalty, you may as well ask those two to do it. They were great great penalties from the goalkeepers as well. So it was a great occasion. There was a couple of fans, obviously, so I was going to extra time and made their way to Halle Stadium, climbed up on walls to see the penalty shootout. So that was good for them. But it's just unfortunate who they draw, because if they had drawn any of the other two, you would have almost put them as a dead cert to get through to the next round.
Yeah. Dundalk, by the way, of course, they've been drawn to play Inter Escaldes of Andorra. And as you mentioned there, Harry, Bose, they gave it a right good fight. Drew with Fehervar in Hungary 1-1, but lost on penalties. Derry City also going out after extra time at 3-2. But just a word on Bose, because they had a very good win in the cup over Cabinteely last night. A tricky enough assignment, but they came through by a couple of goals. And a lot of people are very enthusiastic about Dawson Devoy, who had a fine game against Cabinteely.
Yeah, Dawson is just a little bit unfortunate that he sort of plays in that number 10 role, and they have, I know Danny Mandrew didn't play the other night, but they have Danny Mandrew there, you know, he's a terrific young talent. He's very, very good. He came on the scene sort of last year, very confident lad, very good on the ball, good eye for the pass, and Ball seemed to be producing them. I mean, Promise scored a goal as well, who's a very good talent coming through there in the Ball's ranks. They're having a very good season, and they were very unlucky against that Hungarian team. Whilst they defended for their lives, they were after taking the lead. And, you know, when it goes to penalties, anything can happen. So, yeah, for their first time in Europe in a long time, they did brilliant, and they're having a good season, in fairness.
And, James, you've been our resident Derry man. A case of what might have been against Riterai in Lithuania?
Yeah, very much so a case of what might have been. It was just, again, set pieces letting Derry down, and then maybe tiredness and extra time. I do feel that both Bowes and Derry, unfortunately, the years we're in, but if they had got if we had second legs in these games, I think both of them might have well have gone through from them. I suppose, and Harry will probably have something to say on this. I suppose for Bowes, the only thing that off the back of that was obviously that Matt Doherty signing for Wolves, that's got them more money than they could have ever dreamed of in Europe straight off, or even dreamed of in the League of Ireland. So I take it with the sadness of going out on penalties, at least that was some light relief towards the end of the week.
Yeah, what do you reckon, Harry?
Brilliant.
I think the Bulls lads are all saying that they're not going to squander the money, but you get possibly £1.5 million or maybe £1.75 million. You might want to squander a few quid of it on players.
I don't think so. They've been doing it very well, and they've been producing young players, and I think they'll keep that sort of format going. They're very prudent with the money, and they have been over the last number of years, and
Keith has done a fabulous job on the pitch, producing players, and they have a fantastic link there with St. Kevin's, and that's worked really well with them, with Alan Caffrey producing players. They seem to get on to lads that are coming home from England first, and you know, try and build them up as well. So I don't think they'll squander anything there. I think they'll keep on building the way they're building, and they're going very well.
They'll invest wisely, I'm sure.
I think, Adrian, you have more chance of them building a distillery in the bottom corner for their gin than you do with them squandering on money, in fairness to them.
Yeah, fair point. Results from the Cup, Athlone Town 5, Wexford 3. Quite a game that went to extra time. Galway beaten at home 5-2. By Shelburne, John Caulfield's first game in charge. Mention of Derry City a few moments ago. They progressed, but they left it late. A couple of late goals to see off Drogheda United at United Park. 2-0. Cove Ramblers 0, Dundalk 2 at St. Coleman's Park. Dane Massey and a rather dodgy Dave McMillan penalty. A winning start, though, for the new Dundalk manager, Filippo Giragnoli.
We knew that what was the game here at Cove, they described me. It was exactly what they described me, so... and we spoke with the players before the game. We have to match their aggressiveness for sure, their strength, you know, and which we did, and then use our ability, our technique, our you know, quality with our best players.
Great first goal, wasn't it?
Yes, it was really good. Good combination, good timing, good understanding of the space and the time. So really good, really good execution.
Cove will feel aggrieved about the second goal. They did not think it was a penalty call. How did you see it?
Well, from the bench, I don't know if he was inside the box or outside the box. It was foul. Then I don't know if he was inside or outside. But I think we deserve the win no matter why.
That's Filippo Giragnoli, the new Dundalk manager. Harry, what do you make of the goings-on at Oriel Park in the last week or so with the appointment of... the Italian boys?
If you're to believe all the rumours and stuff that are going on behind the scenes, to talk about Gary Rogers taking corner kicks and Brian Gartland and all sorts of stuff, it's crazy. But it sounds to me to be a little bit far-fetched. I thought losing Vinny was a little bit tough on him, in fairness, a fella that's after winning the league the previous year and winning the League Cup and getting to the final of the FA Cup. And going very well, reasonably well in the league, by their standards, a little bit behind Rovers, obviously. But he was still going well. They certainly weren't the same this year, I may add. But there's plenty of new players in. What I really think about Dundalk is, I think they've actually too many players, if there's such a thing. I think, you know, there's a lot of in the panel there. As I know myself, it's very, very difficult to keep everyone happy. And everyone obviously has an opinion on what team they should be playing and stuff. But I don't know what's going on. I'd like to think we'll give this fella a chance, but reading his background and stuff, I don't think he's done too much in management. And the real test will obviously come in the league and stuff. But it's interesting times up there. I just hope that they come through all this unscathed type of thing, and they get back challenging Rovers in the league, because we need a good Dundalk challenging both in Europe and on a home front.
Okay, well, elsewhere in the Cup, Bray Wanderers 0, Finn Harps 2, both goals scored in the first half by Alexander Cogler, two fine-headed goals. UCD 1, Sligo Rovers 3 at the Bowl. Not without some anxious moments for Sligo Rovers, but they're through to the quarterfinals. Here's the thoughts of their manager, Liam Buckley.
Fairness to UCD, there wasn't a lot in the first half between both teams. They played really well. They pass it well. Andy Moyle has them playing well. I can see them being right in the mix for promotion. So it was always going to be a bananas game from our end of it. Nothing in the first half, but it's had the second half. We controlled much better. And in fairness, we had quite a few chances and bagged our 3 goals.
Were you a little concerned when they got the early goal here?
You're always concerned, especially when it's in a cup game, you know, the kind of way, because obviously you've only got one chance in the cup and that's it. So listen, we regrouped at half time, and you know, I think there's a better, more drive, more commitment in relation to getting forward and whatever. So as I say, I think we deserved our win.
Most managers, of course, naturally at the moment are saying that the league is the priority, but it's nice to get a good cup run and into the last eight. You're right in the mix, and of course Sligo Rovers made the semi-finals last year, so you'd enjoy reaching the semi-finals and possibly a final.
Probably the best day of the season, finals. So as I said to the boys, it's important for all of them as a group to try and do as best they possibly can. It's more important for the fans as well. I've no doubt they're all been watching in on this. It's a great occasion when you get the final, especially for the fans. So we got to make sure that, you know, in the quarterfinal, and semi-final and final, please God, if you were to get there, that we put in 100% effort like we did here this evening. Like, it did take a serious concentration to try and break down this UCD team. But in fairness to them, I think we've deserved it, as I said.
And Liam, it's another win in the bag. I mean, the only defeat since post-lockdown has been that 3-0 loss down in Cork. You must be really pleased with the way things are going.
I'm pleased for the effort that the lads are putting in, and they're putting in just a drive and a commitment to try and get ourselves out of trouble. We were bottom of the table for 4 months, albeit there's only four games being played at that stage. That said, you know, we have a commitment right through the end of the season. It's much more enjoyable. It's much more enjoyable to watch. It's much more enjoyable to play in. So we just got to make sure that everybody's up for it.
There you go. That's Liam Buckley, the Sligo Rovers manager. Shamrock Rovers overcame Cork City by 2-1 at Talla Stadium. Danny Lafferty scoring both goals. Here's the Shamrock Rovers manager, Stephen Bradley.
Probably a comfortable for large parts. Obviously, when they scored, they got a boost. And it was a sloppy goal from our point of view. They came into them for 10 or 15 minutes, but then we got control again, and I thought we deserved winners in the end.
What did you make to the performance overall? Are you happy enough the way the game went for you?
Yeah, I'm delighted. On the back of Thursday, long night, 30 minutes with 10 men. European games always difficult. So today was always a tricky one, but I'm delighted with how we performed.
How's this atmosphere going on for you with no crowds here? Very strange match, kicking off 5:45 on a Monday. How did you make to it all?
Yeah, it is strange. There's no going away from it. It's different without the fans. And like you said, on Monday, but to be fair, we did ask to move the game because of Thursday, like, you know, and so we can't really complain on that front.
Overall, it's a really busy time for you. You've got that huge game now in the league coming up against Bohemians. Tell us about that one first.
Yeah, no, it's another great game to look forward to. We felt, obviously, last week was a great week. We said exciting times, Europe, then cup game, and then the Dublin Derby. So three great games, and we're looking forward to Saturday now.
That's Stephen Bradley, and of course, as we mentioned, Bowes 2-0 winners over Cabinteely. And a result from Monday night in the First Division, Longford Town 3-1 winners over Wexford Youths. A brace in that game for Aaron McCabe, a youngster from County Cavan, and one of the goals was really super if you catch it online. It means that Longford are third in the First Division on 16 points, 3 points behind Cabinteely, who lead the way, Drogheda in second, just 2 points adrift of the leaders. James, overall, when you look back at the cup weekend, what stood out for you, or was there anything that particularly caught your eye?
I think a good performance by Galway initially. The first half in particular, they were very, very good. I thought Cabinteely did well, but well, never really pushing Bowes and Dalymount. Cork, much, much improved performance. Did really, really well. Had a couple of chances against Shamrock Rovers yesterday. Really, really good goal as well. Good team goal. Well worked. Couple of performances like that. Athlone in, as you call it, Lissy Bullen, as they call it, Athlone Town Stadium, could have been ahead before Wexford took the lead. They had a couple of chances early on. And then just to keep going and going and going, it was a crazy game, absolute crazy game. Set-piece nightmare from goalkeepers. Wexford's second goal was particularly a very good goal. I think some of the First Division teams gave it the best chance they can. It's just a pity now. We have to wait until, I think, next weekend, the weekend after this, to find out the draw for the next round. But everybody has a chance in this now. You're only 2 games away from a final now, which is absolutely crazy when you think about it.
Harry, big game this weekend, of course. Shamrock Rovers taking on Bohemians, a top-of-the-table clash, 2 o'clock at Talla Stadium. It'll be live on Saturday Sport with John Kenny and Brian Gartland alongside him. It's going to be something else. Shamrock Rovers, obviously, they can make it a 5-point gap with a victory, but Bowes are in a rich vein of form at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, they're in the best form of any team in the league currently, and playing very, very well and a good, decent brand of football. And they seem to have loads and loads of energy in that team. It's going to be a tough, tough game for Rovers. There's a lot to play for. I mean, if Rovers get the win, as you say, they go 5 points clear, and it'll take a hell of a team to pull them back. Whereas if Bowes get the result, it's all to play for then, you know. So I'm looking forward to that match. They're usually very good games, but I'll miss the atmosphere of the fans and stuff who definitely make the whole thing. So, you know, I'll certainly miss that. But it will be a good game, and there's certainly a lot at stake, and there'll be no quarter given with either team. We know that those two produce decent games, so look forward to that.
Harry, from your own point of view, when you were at Shamrock Rovers and you get into positions like this, did you think at this stage, like a couple of games left, did it ever come into the minds of the players in the change room, do you know what, we have this wrapped up already?
Oh, not at all, no. And it doesn't really come from the manager or coaches or that. And I think the players will sort of get round themselves and say there's nothing won now until the last kick of the season and stuff. But no, the players will rally round. They know the importance of the match. They know the importance of the match to the fans that are looking in. And they'll certainly know the importance of the results that will keep them going. I don't think Bowles have been at these sort of busy heights and challenging for leagues in a good while. So they'll want to keep the whole thing going, and there's nothing like winning that keeps an atmosphere in a changing room. And it could just kickstart them, or not kickstart them, but give them a huge lift for the last few matches of the season.
It's a mouth-watering tie, no doubt about it. Shamrock Rovers taking on Bohemians on Saturday afternoon, and as I mentioned, it's live on Saturday Sport on RTE Radio 1. Harry Kenny, many thanks for joining us on the RTE Soccer Podcast. James, I don't know if you caught it. I didn't, because I was at Belfield for the Sligo Rovers UCD game, but the Women's Champions League final, and five in a row for Olympic Lyonnais seeing off Wolfsburg. They're just outstanding, aren't they?
They are outstanding. And these two, in fairness to them, when you see a final like that, these two are probably the two best teams in Europe in women's football for many years, to tell you the truth. I know Paris Saint-Germain pushed Lyon in the semi, but the two teams are just wonderful. And it's a wonderful... It was the first time RTE Sport covered the Women's Champions League final live, which was great for the sport. Great to get some kind of... publicity to it. It was a good final. Again, it's just one of those things where you just wish there was some form of crowds allowed in, especially when you're in massive stadiums like what they're playing Champions League finals in. But as far as an advert for women's football is concerned, it is the best advert. It uses the best advert for men's football. I don't see why it shouldn't be used for the women's football. And Lyon are just... they're just a force to be reckoned with, and I don't know who can stop them. And if they can, it's going to be take one hell of a bashing to go after them and try and pip them to that. It'll be six in a row, will it be, next year if they get there?
Yeah.
So it'll be a phenomenal achievement if they do.
Closer to home, Shelburne going very nicely indeed. 100% record, top of the Women's National League, 2-1 winners over Wexford Youths in that big game at Tolka Park at the weekend. Huge win for Piemont United by 8-0 over Athlone Town. The Cork City DLR Ways game at Bishopstown was postponed. And Treaty United, great afternoon for them because they overcame Bohemians by 2-1. James, I mentioned that Piemont United 8-0 win. Eleanor Ryan Doyle scoring 4 goals in the game. Quite a return for her.
Yeah, and I may be mistaken. It was Eleanor scored a cracking goal against Shelburne last year in the Cup. Late in the game, I think she scored an absolute smashing goal. A very, very good talent, an excellent talent. Obviously, Anya scoring again as well. I think Anya scored, she may have scored in every game so far this season. But it's a good little run for them, and a good little run for some of our senior international players as well, because they're about to be called in by Vera Powell as well to come in for their training before their two games against Germany and Sweden, I think it is. Is it Sweden? I might be wrong with that one, but Germany's up next anyway. So it's Germany's good to see some of our international players, our international players getting good runs out and getting a bit of confidence in them, especially the likes of Steph Roach and that, getting some football time again. She hasn't really got as much as she would have liked over the last couple of years, but it's great to see her back playing and scoring goals as well.
Yeah, and just in terms of... the league, as I mentioned, Shelburne going very nicely, 5 wins from 5. But Piemont, well, they're going toe-to-toe with them. They've only played 4 games so far, and they've got 12 points. So they, too, have a 100% record.
Yeah, they have in a 100% record along with Shells. So
yeah,
it's good. Like, and I think that's Treaty United's second wing over Bowes, and that was 1-1 for a long period of time in the game as well. So... it's good. There's competitiveness in the league now. It's just a case of who can break those top two down. Will Wexford go on a run? Wexford, we've known over the last couple of years, a very good cup team, along with Shelburne. But it just depends who can break them two down. It looks like it will be a draw here or a loss there. Will hopefully get in the way of Shelburne and Piemont romping away with the league.
Yeah, okay, James. Well, let's turn our attention to the FAI EGM, which took place on Monday night. A resounding vote in favour of endorsing the Memorandum of Understanding, 114-8. There was one abstention, and the vote clears the way now for a government funding worth some €35 million, badly needed funds for the FAI, and I'm sure some relief in quarters around the corridors of Abbottstown. We're joined by Mark Tai of the Sunday Times, who's also got a new book coming out very shortly, along with Paul Roan, called Champagne Football. We might come on to that very shortly. There was an element of controversy, of course, as there always is, Mark, with the FAI, in terms of the role of Roy Barrett. I'll come on to that in just a moment. But for those of us who perhaps don't follow the machinations of the FAI all that closely, can you just in brief explain the background to the EGM and the importance of the vote on Monday night?
Sure. I suppose if you go back to last December, in the post-John Delaney era, we found out that the FAI had debts of over €55 million, and right before Christmas, they're in danger of not meeting their payroll for staff, and they, you know, they need a state bailout. And we had Shane Ross, the Minister of Sport, saying absolutely not. Then we had Roy Barrett, Gary Owens, Niall Quinn, the former visionaries, came in as the new leadership for the FAI, kind of riding to the rescue. And very quickly, the government changed tune before the election, and a huge bailout was agreed with terms and conditions, which subsequently approved controversial, with which Roy Barrett signed up to as the new independent chairperson of the FAI. So some of these conditions included, you know, having to have six independent directors, having to have, you know, on a board of 12, so a 50-50 split, and also big restrictions on the amount of time that football members would serve on the FAI's ruling council. And so those were the things that had to be put through as part of the terms and conditions of this state bailout of some €35 million. Plus another €10 million from the COVID kind of bailout that's been agreed with other sports, field sports. So there's a lot riding on those terms and conditions being agreed by the FAI last night. And they have passed. They passed overwhelmingly, over 90% of the delegates who had voted in favour of these rule changes, the terms and conditions that were attached to the government's money.
Were you surprised by the manner of victory? 114-8 is an absolute landslide.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised that it was so much. They needed, I think, 66% at this stage, and I think it's 75% later on to put it into the constitution. But yeah, there was. I've spoken to a lot of football people who were adamant that they wouldn't vote for 6-6, the split. They were saying that was giving away, you know, the democracy in Irish football to outside interests. It was, you know, there's no precedent in any kind of football association around Europe or the world that they could see where outside interests, or even across Irish sport, there's no similarities or similar scheme set up where outside interests would have such power on a ruling board. So I was surprised. So what happened basically was that the government said, look, this is the only show in town, and Roy Barrett and Gary Owens and Niall Quinn made it clear that this is the only show in town. They would go bust effectively. The Bank of Ireland would take control of the association if they didn't get this money. And so I think the important thing was the football directors, who weren't happy with a lot of these rules or proposed new rules, they signed up. And, you know, I think a lot of them were convinced that, you know, they have legal and fiduciary duties as football directors, as company directors to the limited company that is Cumann na pEill and Éireann, that they have to, you know, do the best thing for the association, keep all these staff, some 200 staff who are employed by the FAI. So once the football directors agreed, you know, this is the only thing to do, I think they held a lot of sway, and they convinced a lot of these delegates that they had to do this, despite people like Mick Wallace, the MEP in Wexford, founder, you know, and Gareth Kelleher and others who were expressing strong misgivings.
Yeah. As I mentioned, not without a whiff of controversy, because Roy Barrett has had to defend his appointment to the role of chairman of the FAI. He was speaking after the EGM last night. He confirmed that the Bank of Ireland chairman, Patrick Kennedy, recommended him to the recruitment company AMROP for his role at the association. The Bank of Ireland, of course, are the FAI's biggest creditors, with loans of around about €52 million. Among his priorities when appointed was to renegotiate the Bank of Ireland debt. So he's been talking to Roy Barrett, this is, to Tony O'Donoghue, RTÉ's soccer correspondent, and was adamant that there's no conflict of interest.
A very strong and positive result, very strong endorsement of all of the reforms and the changes that we need to make. I think the last number of weeks and months has been difficult enough. There's been a lot of debate and discussion, but we've got through that, and I'm really happy with the outcome. All of the resolutions were passed overwhelmingly, so it's really good for the organisation, really good for the staff of the organisation. The staff have been worried about the outcome of this result for quite some time, so for them I'm particularly pleased.
How would you describe the mood of the meeting though?
The mood of the meeting was pretty good. It sits in some ways somewhat similar to the Red Cow meeting. Quite a number of questions around detail. Some people had queries as to, you know, whether we need to make the changes at all. So it was open, and you know, whatever people had to say, they were able to say it. Whatever questions they asked, we were able to give them an answer.
People have questioned how you were recommended sure. for the chairmanship.
Yeah,
and that must have come up. Was it accepted, or did you agree that Patrick Kennedy had put your name forward to AMRO?
Yeah, that did come up, and I suppose the background to that was very simple. I was approached by AMRUP. I'd never talked to AMRUP before. I asked them why they approached me. They said a number of people had recommended me, including Patrick. So I talked to AMRUP. I then talked to Patrick probably the same day to just tell him that I was approached, and I didn't talk to Patrick about anything to do with the FAI until the last week.
But he is the chairman of the Bank of Ireland, the Bank of Ireland, the FAI's main creditors.
Yeah.
Is there not a conflict of interest there?
No, there's not. No, I've known Patrick for a very long time, and you know, in terms of the approach by AMRUP and whatever recommendation was made, there's absolutely nothing to do with the terms and conditions that we agreed with Bank of Ireland. So my appointment was not at the behest of Bank of Ireland or indeed anybody else. It was a simple recommendation by a number of people to a headhunter who approached me, and I took the role on for my own reasons, and that's the reality of it.
What about the optics though, because we're coming out of an era where there was a lack of transparency in the FAI, and this has only come to light in the last while?
Well, but to be honest with you, there's nothing remarkable in people recommending somebody to a headhunter. So I don't view it as being remarkable at all. It is completely transparent now. And in terms of my appointment, it was AMRUP who approached me. It was I who went through the process. I who met all of the stakeholders. And ultimately, the nominations committee approved my appointment to the board, and I was appointed. So any other assertion in my own view is kind of nonsense. Like
Roy Barrett there. We can also now hear the thoughts of the FAI president, Gerry McInerney.
It's been a long struggle, as you know. We've gone through a lot in the recent past. It's a ringing endorsement of football people, of a new era. We're going to look forward from today. It's a very, very positive result for us, and hopefully we can, as I said in January, it's time to get this show back on the road, and I think we now are on our way to getting it back on the road.
There has been huge division though in the association, and calls and questions about the transparency of the process, for example, the appointment of the independent chair.
Well, Tony, you've spoken to the independent chair. That all that process predates me, so I can't possibly comment on it. But all I can tell you is the one thing that I like about this board is the fact that it does question itself and it questions each other. And hopefully that's the way it'll be positive going forward.
Do you feel there's more dissension within the ranks, or do you feel that the board are satisfied now, or the council rather are satisfied with the performance of the board?
Well, Tony, looking at the results tonight in the high 90% on all resolutions, I think that tells its own story.
And how soon do you think that funding can be released now for football?
Well, as far as I'm aware, funding should be released in the next week to 10 days.
That's the FAI president, Gerry McInerney. Mark Tighe, just going back to the comments there of Roy Barrett speaking to Tony, he says no conflict of interest. How do you hear what he had to say?
Well, I think Tony O'Donoghue hit the nail on the head there when he said, you know, the optics here are a big issue. You know, when you have the major creditor recommending someone effectively for the job, that's something that should be declared. Like I asked Roy Barrett about this at the press conference in the Red Cow a couple of weeks ago, and you know he refused to say who that person was that had recommended him to Amrop. And you know, so the issue is, you know, Bank of Ireland didn't take a haircut on any of its debts owed to the FAI. You know, so maybe you know they stood their position, but you know, having the chairman of the bank, the major creditor, recommending the new chairperson of the person who's on the other end of the negotiation table, that's something that should have been declared immediately or when the question was asked, even of recently as a few weeks ago. So the optics aren't good, and there are other issues people have raised, you know, about corporate governance under the new leadership, about the finance committee hasn't met since it was established last October. People like Larry Bass and Andrew Doyle have. You know, Andrew Doyle's resigned. Larry Bass has raised big questions about why they haven't met. So, you know, for proper corporate governance, you need to have a spread of oversight and a spread of responsibility. So, I think they can't delay on that front anymore, because you know, if they spread that responsibility and oversight, then we'll actually have a new FAI. You know, not just the same issues repeating that happened under the John Delaney regime.
Mark, this is what makes this a little bit bizarre, because the ODCE are crawling all over the FAI, looking for information from them so as they can, what looks like, build a case about the previous regime. Mm-hmm. And to have this kind of hidden a bit seems a bit odd, considering, as I said, the director's mulling through papers and papers and papers and papers and reams of paper about this over the last year and a half. Like,
yeah, it's incredibly disappointing, you know, someone on the outside with a keen interest in it to see repeated. Like, one of the big failings from the previous regime under John Delaney was how committees like the Audit Committee or the Finance Committee didn't do their job in calling, you know, in seeing paperwork for various deals, like the Sports Direct deal, an amazing deal that, you know, it was booked at a 6.5 million euro of income, and it ended up being a loan that had to be repaid immediately, you know, on demand. And, you know, the Finance Committee never sought that paperwork. But now we don't even have a Finance Committee. So that's, you know, I spoke to Niamh Brennan, the expert in corporate governance in UCD, you know, and she said that's just appalling, you know, for any company, especially a company teetering on the brink of insolvency, not to have that kind of level of internal oversight. So, yeah, look, great credit has to go to Gary Owens and Roy Barrett and Alquin for, you know, effectively they've done the big thing here. They've got the bailout. They've secured the immediate future of the FAI, but they really need to handle the nitty-gritty stuff of getting these committees in place, of being open and transparent about their own situations. Like the other big thing coming up is who's going to be the full-time CEO. Gary Owens is there in an interim position. Niall Quinn's position, we're not really sure how long that's going to continue in this, you know, new position of deputy CEO. And, you know, there's questions about what role Roy Barrett played in getting Gary Owens in there. And I suppose who's appointed the CEO in the future, that's going to be a big issue, because, you know, Gary Owens has done very well, but he is close to the chairman, and that relationship, there should be kind of a natural tension there between the chief executive and the chairperson of the FAI. And, you know, maybe they'll go a different avenue, and maybe if they recruit a CEO, you know, who doesn't have those links, because at the moment we've got very close links between the chairman of Bank of Ireland, the chairman of the FAI, and the CEO of the FAI. And I think, you know, it would be good to if they can just be transparent and open and, you know, lay it all out there, not having to have the media dragged, you know, pull teeth out and, you know, point things out that should have been pointed out a long time ago.
And I think for the footballing public who watch this kind of stuff, you know, from a distance, and you're obviously very immersed, Mark, because you've got the book coming out, what is it, mid-September?
It's out in 2 weeks, September 17th, Champagne Football hit the bookshops, just got the first print copies myself now. Very, very exciting.
Yeah, the rise and fall of John
it's
Delaney.
A coaching manual, but you've, obviously, yeah.
But you obviously immersed yourself in the book and in research along with Paul Roan over the last couple of years. But people who follow football from the outside looking in, they just want to see, you mentioned the word transparency there a few moments ago. And one would have thought after all the years of a lack of transparency that now was the time to see a lot more openness. And people just wonder, will the new FAI be all that different from the old FAI?
Yeah, I'd hope so. I think that was one of the huge issues under the John Delaney regime, was just this overriding need for secrecy. I've interviewed so many people, and, you know, I was aghast at some people that said, you know, that they'd rather not know things because then John Delaney couldn't accuse them of leaking them. And even though it was their commercial or legal responsibility to know these things. So this is, you know, people are more concerned about being accused about leaking stuff rather than actually doing their jobs. And Now, I don't think that same culture of fear exists at all under the new regime. Like, you speak to staff now and things are much better. There is an openness and transparency in internally in how they're running things. But I think, yes, the communication on corporate governance issues and with, you know, the public, the fans, the media, that needs to improve a huge amount. And they need to address some very basic matters with, you know, internal committees. Like, there's some great people on their board now. They've got Robert Watt from the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform, Catherine Guy, who's a well-known businesswoman and solicitor. So these are people who are bringing in skills and experience that just weren't on the FAI board. And now two more independent directors will come in. So you'd hope with these reforms, with these independent people coming in, there won't be these cliques forming and keeping things to themselves or keeping power to themselves. Because that is the overriding concern, I think, of many people, you know, that, you know, we've replaced one type of regime with a slightly different regime of a new clique, and that would be very sad if that does happen.
Mark, speaking of leaks and stuff like that, when someone had the vision to originally leak this €100,000 loan, whatever we call it, did you really think what you were going to undercover, or had you a sneaky suspicion it was as bad as you found out?
We didn't know it would snowball the way it did in those weeks. Remember back, you know, just it was the week before Mick McCarthy's first match in Gibraltar, that story broke on St. Patrick's Day, and, you know, we never expected John Delaney to go to the High Court try and injunct us, and it really did open a can of worms. You know, myself and Paul would have long had suspicions about the way John Delaney's modus operandi in the FAI, and just this overriding need for secrecy. You know, someone who's that secretive and non-responsive to very straightforward questions, it just raises the antenna of journalists, you know. And but the way it escalated so quickly over those weeks into April, and, you know, the move to executive vice president and within 7 days, and then he was out suspended within another 4 weeks after the Oireachtas hearing. We never predicted those chain of events, and, you know, the extent of sort of how rotten it actually was, and internally in terms of how bad the finances were and how badly mismanaged they'd been, and some of the misuse of finance for personal gain that, you know, my jaw was often on the floor when I was speaking to people and who were helping me or guiding me in terms of where to look for information. So, you know, the level of detail that we discovered often was jaw-dropping, yeah, and just completely surprising.
Was it an enjoyable book to write in any way at all? Because it sounds like it was a fair old grind at times, which I'm sure it was, having to dig and ask so many questions. But did you enjoy the experience of writing it?
Oh, completely, yeah. Like, it's my first book. Like, I'm used to doing, you know, getting things out in five, six days. You know, sometimes you work on longer projects, but for this to be able to delve in and, you know, I traveled the length of the country, meeting people in various hotels and cafes before the COVID lockdown. Thankfully, like, we basically had the book done back at the end of March, and we were able to do a few late interviews that thankfully people belatedly agreed to talk to us, but we have the bones of it done by the end of March. So we wrote the book from November to March, and it's been really enjoyable, actually. We did a few joint interviews. People would want to meet me and Paul together. Paul is based over in England, so we split things up, you know, in how we did it. But it was just a journalist's dream, really, to have that time and that, you know, resource to go off and say, we can go really deep in this and get, you know, really into the cracks and dig out stuff here that's never come out before about well-known issues. And we can get this into a book where we've got a really good publisher who's going to back us and get it into print. So it's been a journalist's dream, really, to get that opportunity.
Well, listen, well done on all your work on it, all that digging over the last couple of years. Tremendous stuff. Mark Tighe of the Sunday Times, good luck with the new book, which is out in a couple of weeks' time. Champagne Football, The Rise and Fall of John Delaney and the Football Association of Ireland. James, that's about all we have time for. How are you going to call Saturday's game? Shamrock Rovers or Bohemians or a draw?
I'm going to call it a draw. I think it'll be a draw. I think the two teams will just cancel each other out, which is an awful shame. It'd be great for the league if Bowes got a win. But I think a point, I don't think Keith Long will be too worried about a point either, because Rovers still have to go and play Dundalk. So I think he'll be happy with that.
Okay, I'm going to go for Shamrock Rovers win. But there you go. Anyway, we shall see. James, many thanks for that. And of course, in the meantime, don't forget, the Republic of Ireland against Bulgaria is live on 2FM. Also coverage next Sunday of the Ireland-Finland game. More on that anon. Until the next time, bye-bye.